almost imperceptibly as he glanced at them. "So much for a low profile," she muttered. She grabbed Wallace's arm. "Come on, we're getting out of here." They wove their way through the crowd and to the door. It was just after midnight, and the party had reached critical mass. The acrid smell of spilled beer and sweat mingled throughout the house. She gulped the cool night air as they stepped out onto the lawn. As soon as they were a few feet from the house, Wallace spoke in a low voice.
"What happened?"
"I'll tell you in the car." She glanced into the bushes around the walk. "I'll drop you off before I head to Max. I think I'm working late tonight."
"I'll go with you."
He looked over his shoulder. The house thrummed with light and noise behind them.
"Veronica, those guards were armed. I saw one adjusting his piece. Whatever's going on in that house? It's serious, isn't it?"
She didn't answer, and he didn't seem to expect her to. They hurried the rest of the way across the lawn in silence. Chapter 13.
"So the guy was right there when you got my text?"
Max stared at Veronica in horror over the edge of her laptop. It was an hour after they'd left the party, and Veronica and Wallace sat on the sofa in Max's loft describing what they'd seen. Veronica nodded.
"Yeah, I don't think he saw anything, but still."
She sighed, taking a sip from her beer bottle and resting her head back against the couch. Max's apartment, rented in the salad days when she'd worked for Kane Software, was located in a sleek building just a few blocks away from Neptune's single art house movie theater. It was sparely decorated. A dark red couch covered in jacquard pillows took up one wall, and a plasma screen TV was mounted on the exposed brick opposite. Where most people would have put a dinner table, Mac had a high-tech ergonomic desk covered with monitors and computer equipment that changed height at the touch of a button. A half-dissected motherboard sat on the kitchen counter, surrounded by tools and chips. Wallace frowned.
"So these guys are what? Dealers?"
Veronica shook her head.
"I don't think so. They're not soldiers. They're higher up."
"Way higher up."
Max sat in an overstuffed armchair, still wearing the flannel pajama bottoms and gray t-shirt in which she'd answered the door. Her face was pale and clean scrubbed, but lit by an almost feverish glow. Mac was nothing if not an information junkie, and she'd spent her whole night digging further and further into the Gutierrez family dynasty. This was what she'd been hired to do. Not to man the phones or even to do the business's IT, but to dig. And no one was as good at it as she was.
"So here's what I've found so far. Both Eduardo and Federico were born in TJ. Eduardo's parents own an import-export firm. Federico's dad, he's a widower, owns some dude ranch in Rosarito, down on Baja."
Mac frowned at her screen.
"Looks like both cousins went to boarding school in Switzerland. Now they're at Hearst. They have clean records in the States and abroad. They're listed as the owners of Sun and Surf, Inc. They have a whole string of luxury vacation rentals along the coast. Their houses go for as much as $10,000 a night."
Wallace whistled. Veronica took another swig from her beer, the cold, bitter taste waking her up.
"So, other than blood ties, there's no obvious cartel connection?"
"Well, I'm not an accountant, but there's a ton of money moving through the coffers. I don't know, maybe that's normal for this kind of business, but it seems a bit over the top."
"So it's a front?"
Wallace asked.
"If it's a front, it's a good one," Max said. "They have Yelp reviews and everything. And last year there was a blurb in Condé Nast Traveler calling the houses exquisite."
"There was a horse ranch in Oklahoma that got busted last year for the same kind of thing," said Veronica.
"It looked totally legit. They trained racehorses, had a breeding program, and paid their taxes, but also happened to be funneling money through for the Zetas."
Wallace shuddered.
"Man, I saw something about those guys on the news a couple months ago. Scared the hell out of me."
"Well, brace yourself," Max said. "Eduardo and Federico's paternal uncle is Jorge Gutierrez Trejo, a.k.a. El Oso, a.k.a. La Muerte Negro. Currently, one of the DEA's most wanted. He's been in charge of the Millennial Cartel in Baja for almost 20 years. Again, I'm not an expert on these things, but 20 years is a long time. Most of the major cartels have gone through some kind of takeover or have splintered off into rival factions. Not the millennials. She looked a little queasy. And he hasn't stayed in charge by being a nice guy. Veronica stood up and went behind Mac's chair, looking over her shoulder at the screen. What she saw sent her blood cold. Mac had pulled up a rap sheet detailing a list of El Oso's alleged crimes. In the last decade, as the cartel wars steadily escalated in scope and violence, his people had been connected with a spate of butchery across western Mexico. Bodies of rivals had been hung from streetlights or bridges with warnings tacked to their chests. Known hangouts of other cartels had been shot up, bombed, even gassed. In September of last year, someone had left 13 severed heads prominently in a bin of soccer balls in the Estadio Caliente, Tijuana's biggest soccer stadium. No one had been charged with the crime, but all of the victims were from the Sonora cartel, which had been jockeying for position on the Millennials' turf. And while the Millennials used the worst of their torture and bloodshed to send a message to their rivals, they weren't above using it to get what they wanted out of civilians who had nothing to do with the drug trade. Gutierrez's men took anyone from poor farmers to wealthy college students for ransom, killing anyone who didn't pay up. There were stories, too, of women who had been kidnapped from their homes and sold into slavery or prostitution.
"Well, now," murmured Veronica. "I wonder if they expanded their trafficking operations to Neptune."
Mac looked up at her. "You think they'd take an American citizen?" Wallace asked. "Not likely. These guys aren't stupid. They wouldn't want to risk bringing the FBI down on their operations," Mac said. Veronica started to pace. "You're right." She ran her hands through her hair. The curls had almost entirely fallen out by now, the flower bent and oozing a sickly sweet perfume. "Okay, what about this? What if Haley saw something she wasn't supposed to at the party that night? What if she, I don't know, overheard a conversation about illegal activities, or saw something that could be used against them in court? They might have thought they had to get rid of her."
"Get rid of her?" Wallace's forehead creased. "You think..."
"I don't know," she said grimly. "But if Haley somehow made herself a liability, they might have decided killing her was worth the risk." Silence descended on the room. Veronica went and stood by the window, looking out over the street. The traffic signal flashed red. A skinny cat wove its way between garbage cans. Otherwise, nothing moved. According to her watch, it was almost 2.
"We should go to Lam with this."
Mac's voice was slow and measured, but Veronica heard the strain in it.
"We should tell him these guys are cartel-connected, that Haley was getting cozy with Federico."
Veronica thought back to her conversation with Lam. He'd done his telltale hair flick and avoided her eyes when she'd asked about the house.
"I'm pretty sure Lam already knows their cartel."
Mac bit the corner of her lip. Wallace furrowed his brow.
"I mean, he hasn't shut the party down yet. Why is that? He has plenty of cause. The place is crawling with underage drinking, just for starters. But Lam likes to be the biggest bully in the schoolyard. He wouldn't want to take on someone like the Millennials." She smirked. "He might even be in their pocket, for all we know."
"Then what are we going to do?" Mac asked, her voice tense. "Cartel stuff is kind of outside our skill set, Veronica. These guys are really dangerous." She closed her eyes and saw Haley there behind her lids. Not as she'd been in the prim school photos on the billboards. Not as she'd been the night of her disappearance, sultry, sexy. Instead, she saw her as she'd looked in the candid snapshots she'd seen in the DeWalt's hotel room. Mild, friendly, perhaps a little ingenuous. A girl who could find herself deep in trouble without quite knowing how she'd gotten there.
"I don't know," she said. "There's got to be something I can do to draw them out. But I don't know what that is yet."
Mac laughed. The sound was shrill in the stillness.
"You'll figure it out, though," she said, and she sounded more scared than admiring.
It's what you do.
Promise us you're not going to do anything crazy, Wallace said, looking nervous.
Veronica didn't answer, not wanting to make a promise she wasn't sure she could keep. There were answers in that house, and she might have to go back in to get them.
Chapter 14.
Good morning, sunshine.
Keith Mars stood at the stove, moving eggs across a skillet with the edge of a spatula. He was dressed in a gray button-down shirt and slacks, a black apron tied around his waist. He smiled at Veronica as she padded into the kitchen, barefoot.
Veronica, head still fuzzy with exhaustion, poured herself a cup of coffee from the Krups. At the end of the counter, a small TV was on, set to mute and tuned to the news. Trish Turley's mouth moved silently, but the curl to her lips made clear she was upbraiding someone.
You're cooking? I woke up and felt like I could manage it. Got time for breakfast?
Keith held up a platter of bacon and wafted the smell toward her enticingly.
Not really, but I'm going to have some anyway.
She pulled out the bar stool at the island and sat. The wall clock read 10:45. She'd had 5 hours of restless sleep, disrupted by images of bodies hanging from bridges and the nagging of her own brain, fumbling at the details of the case even while she rested.
So, what did you do last night?
Keith portioned the eggs onto two plates that already held toast, cantaloupe, and bacon. He carried them to the kitchen island and set one in front of her. She spread jam across her toast.
Well, we started out at Carlos and Charlie's for hurricanes, but after I lost the wet t-shirt contest, we were like, forget this. So we popped some mollies and headed to the O-Niners foam party. I don't remember much, but I did get the digits for a really cute Delta Sig. His dad owns a Jaguar dealership.
I thought you already had a boyfriend with a fancy car, Keith said, taking a bite of bacon.
You can never have too many fancy cars.
Fair enough, he nodded. So, how's the case going?
Oh, are we talking about that now?
She kept her voice airy, but her eyes darted to his face. He looked at her with mild brown eyes, his expression disarmingly bemused. It was a look she'd seen before, a look that had lured liars and cheaters into a false sense of security with a man they underestimated. Her eyes narrowed. It was then that she noticed the wooden box on the island, nestled between the salt and pepper shakers and the pitcher of orange juice.
What's that? She asked cautiously.
I got you something, he said. There was a faint tension around his eyes that she couldn't read. She picked up the gift carefully with both hands, testing it. It was lighter than she expected. She unlatched the lid and opened it. Nestled inside was a revolver so black it looked like a shadow against the red foam holding it in place. It was small, discreet, an investigator's gun. A gun that concealed easily. Carefully, deliberately, she shut the lid and latched it again and pushed it away, her heart racing in her chest.
I asked for a pony, and year after year I'm disappointed.
He didn't flinch. Veronica, listen to me.
Why would you think I'd want this? She stood up. Is this some kind of fucked up scare tactic? Welcome to the business, Veronica. By the way, here's your piece. Try not to kill anyone.
Veronica.
His voice was louder now, but not angry. She shook her head, mute. But then she met his eyes and suddenly realized what that expression was. It was sadness. She sat back down at the counter, as far from the box as possible.
I've been thinking about what you said the other night.
He took a deep breath.
Maybe you're right. Maybe you can't fight against this. God help me, maybe it's just who you are.
For the first time in what seemed like forever, he looked away. His gaze rested on the wooden box.
It's my own fault. How were you supposed to see any other options with me putting our family on the line time and time again over some case or other? With me letting you help?
His gaze snapped up to meet hers.
I accept that you're here. I accept that this is what you choose. But Veronica, if this really is what you want,
You have to take responsibility for your safety.
That doesn't mean I have to carry a gun, she said. She realized she was humiliatingly close to tears and bit hard on the inside of her cheek. Dad, this is ridiculous. 90% of what we do is at a desk. I don't need this.
This is what it costs.
He shook his head. His fists were clenched, twisting a paper napkin to shreds between them.
Veronica, if you want to run with grown-up PIs, this is what you have to do. You're going to get your permit. You're going to learn to use your weapon. You're going to practice with it. You're going to use it if you have to.
They sat in tense silence for a moment. Veronica's hands clenched at her sides. She didn't even want to touch the box again. But a part of her, a part she didn't want to think about, kept whispering that he was right. She thought of the night 2 months earlier when Stu Cobbler had hunted her through her old classmate Gia Goodwin's loft. I could have used it then. But the thought sent a shiver up her spine. Did she imagine she would have shot him? Killed him? Then she saw something that sent all thoughts of a gun out of her mind entirely. She lunged across the island for the remote and unmuted the TV. A caption ran across the bottom of the screen. Second girl goes missing in Neptune, California.
Are saying the girl was last seen at a party Wednesday night between midnight and 1 a.m. Aurora Scott, age 16, was visiting a friend at Hearst College for spring break.
Turley's lips were twisted into what looked like a furious sneer, but it was impossible to mistake the smug triumph in her voice.
No word out of the Balboa County Sheriff's Department yet. I'm guessing they're working out how to spin this after ignoring Haley DeWalt's disappearance for more than a week.
A photo of a teenage girl appeared on screen. She had auburn hair, with long side-swept bangs and cat-like green eyes. Three or four silver hoops lined each earlobe, and the only makeup she wore was heavy black eyeliner. In spite of her hard-edged look, she smiled sweetly at the camera, a dimple in her left cheek.
Oh my God, Veronica breathed. So soft, she barely heard herself.
She shook her head.
I've seen her.
What? Where? Her father turned to her, a hound dog glint in his eye. He'd seen the loose thread of a clue and couldn't help but grab at it. Last night at the party. Veronica turned up the volume. Less than 12 hours earlier, she'd seen Aurora Scott in a leopard print bikini, looking older than her 16 years by far. She'd been showing off her tan lines on a dais while the nephew of a drug lord leered at her, the same boy with whom Haley DeWalt had last been seen.
Sheriff Lamb!
Trish Turley stared directly into the camera with wide blue eyes.
It's time to wake up. You have a predator on the loose in Neptune, California, and until he's caught, every single girl who goes to Neptune for spring break will be at risk.
It's getting harder to disagree with her, murmured Keith.
We now go live to a press conference with the Scott family, Turley said.
The camera cut to a podium where a middle-aged couple stood side by side. The man was thin and wiry, with dun brown hair tinged with gray. He had a kind of ravaged handsomeness, his face tan and craggy. But it was the tall, willowy blonde next to him who caught Veronica's attention. Her hair was shorter than it used to be, bobbed around her ears. She gained a little weight, too, and it suited her. Her large brown eyes pleaded with the camera. For a moment, Veronica could not breathe. Her lungs knotted up inside her chest, clenched and useless. Veronica dropped the remote.
Holy shit, Keith swore, oblivious to the smell of burning bacon, his eyes glued to the screen.
Please, said the woman, her voice faltering in the microphone. Please, if you're watching this. All I want is to see my daughter again.
She dissolved into tears, her hand fluttering up to rest on her mouth. Veronica knew that voice as well as she knew her own. She still heard it sometimes, in her dreams. It was Leanne Mars, her mother.
Chapter 15. Leanne and her new husband were staying at a condo on the bluffs overlooking Neptune, nestled among the pines and palms on the hillside. Any cheaper accommodations were booked, the vacancies left by balking spring breakers were being snatched up by incoming reporters, cameramen, and producers as quick as they opened up. Petra Landros had put the Scots in the modern marble and glass temple of the Apollo Heights townhomes, courtesy of the Neptune Chamber of Commerce. Veronica's mind was a staticky blank as she rang the doorbell to their unit. Sunlight wove through the trees, leaving dappled patterns across the beds of river stones and succulents lining the front walk. The birds chattered cacophonously overhead. Veronica noticed everything as if the information came from far away as she waited for her mom, or her new husband, to come to the door. Landros had given her a quick spiel over the phone. Leanne and her husband, Tanner, lived in Tucson, Arizona. Tanner worked at the Home Depot. Leanne was a part-time receptionist in a dentist's office. They'd flown out that morning as soon as they'd gotten the news. They were, of course, devastated. Veronica didn't mention her connection to Leanne. She probably should have. She now officially had a conflict of interest. Or, at least, she would if she had any intention of letting her feelings get in the way of solving the case. But she didn't. And given how she and Leanne had left things all those years ago, it all seemed too awkward, too personal to try to explain to Petra Landros. So the client is my mother, but at this point it's more an honorary title than anything, as I haven't seen her in more than a decade. No big deal. Veronica gave a small start as the door latch scraped open. In the entryway stood a small boy with sandy blonde hair. He was about 6 years old, in a Batman t-shirt and short pants. He had child-sized bongos strapped across his chest. He squinted up at her.
"You don't look like the police."
She knelt down to his level. All at once the distant feeling disappeared, and she was terribly, intensely present. She looked into the boy's eyes. They were light brown, big in his small, serious face. "Neither do you," she said, narrowing her eyes in mock suspicion. He didn't smile.
"The police are stupid. I'm Batman."
With that, he beat a little tattoo on his drums and ran back into the condo.
"Mom? Someone's here?"
"Mom." She watched the back of his head, getting slowly to her feet, her skin prickled with adrenaline. He called her Mom. For a moment, she lingered at the threshold. Then she stepped through the door. A moment later, Leanne Mars, Leanne Scott, came in from the other room. It had been 11 years since she'd seen her mother, 11 years since Veronica had looked Leanne in the face and told her to leave. Veronica had been 17 years old, and it was one of the hardest things she'd ever done. But Leanne couldn't be trusted. All her best intentions, her love, her kindness, her good humor, had long since been drowned in the bottom of a bottle. Now Leanne stood in the doorway, staring at her daughter. Her mouth was open, as if she'd been about to speak but had forgotten what to say. The idea of saying anything at all was absurd. After such a long silence, after all that had happened in the long years between them, it was unthinkable. But they couldn't stand in the entryway forever. Veronica gave her mother an awkward smile.
"Hi, Mom."
Leanne shut her mouth. She took a few steps forward. Veronica realized that she was moving in for a hug and took an instinctive step back. Leanne stopped in her tracks, her arms suddenly limp at her sides. From the other room came a syncopated drumbeat, tapped haphazardly on the bongos. Veronica cleared her throat. "Petra Landros sent me. I'm here to help you find Aurora." Leanne laughed. It was a strange, shrill sound, like something breaking in her throat.
Of course you are. Of course it'd be you."
She turned away.
"Come in."
She followed her mother into a plush, high-ceilinged room where a sleek Danish living room set was arranged around a fireplace. Most of one wall was taken up by windows. Outside, A wide balcony looked out over the Neptune skyline. The little boy sat on a thick-napped rug, still pounding on his bongo.
Can I get you anything?
Leanne's eyes kept darting toward her, and then away just as quickly.
Water, coffee?
No, thank you. She's just another client, Veronica told herself. Just another scared parent who's lost a child. That thought made her want to laugh out loud, even as a humorless and hollow feeling opened like a chasm inside her. Veronica stood awkwardly near a chair, waiting for the invitation to sit. Leanne squeezed her hands together like she was hoping to wring some comfort from them. She stared down at the little boy.
Hunter, sweetheart, can you go to your room and play alone for a little while? I need to talk to this lady.
Hunter stood up, picking up the bongos. He gave Veronica a long, inscrutable look.
Are you going to find Rory?
Rory? She realized a beat too late that that must be Aurora's nickname. She sat down on the long edge of an L-shaped couch, just in front of him. I'll do my very best. A small crease formed between his eyes. He glanced up at Leanne, who watched fretfully from a few feet away.
Mom, can't I stay?
Leanne closed her eyes for a moment.
Please, sweetheart, do what I've asked. We just need a little privacy.
His little mouth turned down. He stood up and grabbed the end of his bongo drums, dragging them behind him as noisily as he could. He disappeared into the hallway, and a few seconds later the sound of a slamming door reverberated toward them. Leanne slowly sank into a seat several feet away from Veronica. She stared down at her lap.
You must have questions.
We don't have to... Veronica spoke at the same time, her voice overlapping with her mother's. She pressed her lips tightly together in a rueful smile.
It's okay. I'm here to do a job to help you find Aurora. You don't owe me any answers.
I've been clean for 7 years now. 7 years, 3 months, 12 days. It was like Leanne hadn't even heard.
Tanner and I met in recovery. He's Rory's dad. Hunter's dad, too. I guess that's obvious. I'm sorry, I'm nervous.
She took a deep breath, and when she spoke, her voice was calmer. Her eyes settled on Veronica's face. She looked almost frightened, her pupils wide and dark.
Hunter's your little brother.
Yeah, Veronica said softly. I got that. She looked away, a strange knot twisting in her chest. She felt lost, disoriented, as if all the world's coordinates had suddenly rearranged themselves, and she didn't have a compass. Anger had been her default for so long with her mother, and if it were just Leanne, she could have rallied that anger. She could have stoked it to protect herself, to keep her mother at arm's length. But a brother? She didn't know what to do with that.
What is he? 5, 6?
Veronica's voice was so soft it was almost swallowed by the enormous room. Leanne nodded.
He's 6.
She smiled weakly.
He doesn't know about you. I've always wanted to tell him, but it's difficult to explain.
Veronica wondered if the little boy was in his room with his ear pressed to the door. She remembered being 6, keeping half an eye on the levels in the bottle, understanding even then that there was some mysterious relationship between that and her mother's behavior. Sometimes it had been better than that. Sometimes it had been good. But that only made the bad times so much worse.
Right now, with so much going on, I don't want to confuse him. He's already terrified. He loves Rory.
Tears spilled down her cheek. She didn't try to wipe them away. It's fine, Mom. There's no reason to change anything, Veronica told herself. I don't want you back in my life. I don't want your drama, your manipulations, your lies. I don't need you. I don't need this little kid, whom I've never even met.
We don't need to complicate things right now. We just need to focus on bringing Rory home.
Leanne nodded, chewing on the ragged edge of a nail. Her lips trembled slightly. She took a deep breath, her eyes settling on Veronica's.
When Miss Landreau said she was sending a PI, I did... I had a moment where I wondered if it'd be your dad. I never thought it would be you.
Veronica was spared having to answer by the sound of someone coming in the front door. Leanne shot to her feet. Veronica relaxed slightly. They wouldn't be alone together anymore. No more memory lane. No more risk of ripping open ancient wounds. A moment later, two men entered the room. One was the lanky man Veronica had seen on TV hours earlier, Aurora's dad, Tanner Scott. He wore a denim jacket fraying at the wrists and carried two small white sacks that smelled of grease and salt. Behind him came a broad-shouldered boy in a gray cardigan and skinny jeans. He was maybe 18 or 19, clean-shaven and pale. He balanced a tray of fountain drinks in his hand. Something about him looked vaguely familiar to Veronica.
"We got lunch."
The first man held up the sacks. His eyes fell on Veronica.
"This is my husband, Tanner," Leanne said. "Tanner, this is Veronica. She's the PI Petra hired to help us find Aurora."
Tanner's pale blue eyes widened, and he did a double take, looking Veronica up and down. A sad, strained smile spread over his face.
"Veronica, honey, I've heard so much about you over the years. It's great to finally meet you."
His voice had a clipped Midwestern twang, the vowels hammered flat. Before she could do anything, he'd wrapped her in a quick, surprisingly strong hug, takeout bags still clutched in his hands. Veronica stood stiff and awkward in his embrace. When he let go, she stepped discreetly away.
"And this is Adrian Marks," Leanne said quickly, gesturing to the teenaged boy. "He's Rory's best friend. He practically lived at our house last year. He was with her the night she disappeared."
All at once, Veronica realized where she'd seen him. He'd been at the party. She'd seen him playing Lady Gaga on the grand piano. He nodded at her now. His mouth was small and sullen, his eyes dark and wounded. She felt a rush of sympathy. He had the same lost look she'd seen on Haley DeWalt's Friends, the same sense of some vital, careless, innocent thing ruined.
"Paradise doesn't just get lost in Neptune, it gets raised to the ground."
Tanner set the food on the kitchen counter.
"Do you mind us eating while we talk? I don't want the burgers to get cold."
"Not at all." They took a few minutes, digging through the bags, opening the foil-wrapped burgers, and sorting out whose was whose. Leanne took a tray to Hunter in his bedroom. By the time she returned, the others had gathered around a table topped with sea-green glass, burgers unwrapped, fries jutting from cardboard containers. There was extra food. Tanner had offered a burger to Veronica, but her stomach turned at the thought. She pulled out her notebook and a pen.
"Can you tell me a little about Aurora?" Veronica asked.
"Her interests, her personality." Tanner stood halfway up so he could get his phone out of his pocket. He opened his picture albums app and handed the phone to Veronica.
"I made an album, to show the cops or the press or whoever," he said.
There were two or three dozen photos. The first was dated 2006, when Aurora would have been 8. Veronica started scrolling through. The pictures showed first a whip-thin, wild-haired little girl. At 8, 9, 10, Aurora Scott had a coltish look, all hard angles and tensed muscles, like at any moment she was seconds from bolting. "A kid who ran and played," she thought, looking at the skinned knee below a pair of shorts, the dirty arms and legs. She couldn't even hold still for Leanne and Tanner's wedding pictures. In almost every shot, she was looking away from the camera or fidgeting with the bow in her hair, her flower girl basket half-crushed in one hand. The girl grew up before Veronica's eyes. There were pictures of her in the Arizona desert, standing next to towering saguaro cacti, pictures of her holding 2-year-old Hunter in her lap in front of a Christmas tree. One caught her in midair as she leapt from a diving board at the pool, arms and legs akimbo. In junior high, she went through a lightning-quick girly phase, sequins and short skirts, bubblegum pink lip gloss, and long wavy hair. That look disappeared abruptly between snapshots, replaced with knit caps and baggy layers. Skater chic.
She's spirited, Leanne said softly. Funny. Smart.
Adrian nodded his agreement. The last handful of photos, the ones taken in the past year, showed a girl with the casual, hard-edged style of a tomboy grown up to be beautiful. Black leather jacket, distressed jeans, stretched-out sweaters hanging from one shoulder. Her auburn hair was long and straight, and her eyes were green, cat-like, and rimmed with black liner. She smirked and pouted, never quite smiling for the camera. Veronica's chest tightened. Something in the tilt of the girl's head, the arch of her eyebrow, made Veronica think of Lily Kane. Brazen, fearless. And something else, maybe just a certain sharpness in Aurora's eyes, reminded her of herself. 16, with a hair-trigger bullshit detector. 16, and looking for a fight. She looked up at Leanne and Tanner. Did you know Aurora was planning to come to Neptune for spring break? Tanner and Leanne exchanged glances. We did, Tanner said. We drove her to the bus station. She came out to visit Adrian. We were nervous about letting her come, of course, but she really wanted to. This is Adrian's freshman year at Hearst, Leanne explained. She blinked, and Veronica saw tears forming in the corners of her eyes. Adrian's own eyes were downcast, heavy. She begged us to let her come out and see him. Because she wanted to is a strange reason to let your unaccompanied 16-year-old stay with a male friend in the combination drug-den orgy that is Neptune's spring break scene. Veronica tried to keep her expression neutral, but Leanne must have seen a flicker of judgment somewhere, because she shook her head. I know it sounds negligent, but you have to understand, Rory doesn't always make friends easily. She's been so lonely since Adrian moved to school. We thought it would do her some good. Veronica shot a glance at Adrian. He picked at his French fries, his burger sitting untouched in front of him. How long have you and Aurora been friends, Adrian? His eyes darted up to meet hers. 2 years. His voice had a light, lilting tenor. She was this little nothing freshman, no friends, no cachet. But she overheard some musclehead calling me a faggot the first week of class. He gave a sad little smile. Our high school was hell on earth for a gay guy. She spray-painted homophobe on the guy's Camaro in the parking lot. The security cameras caught her doing it, and she ended up in detention for a month afterward. Ah, well, that explains the permission to stay with a male friend. That's our girl. Tanner patted Adrian roughly on the back. Doesn't always know how to pick her battles, but goddammit, she's got a good heart. His voice cracked a little. Veronica smiled, handing the phone back to Tanner. She seems like a great kid. Oh, she is. Tanner looked down at his phone and then set it next to his burger wrapper. It hasn't always been easy for her. She's been through a lot over the years. Her mom left when she was little, and I was pretty much a useless drunk until I got clean. He said it matter-of-factly, but his lips twisted downward as he said it. That sort of thing takes a toll on a child. You don't say. Veronica looked at her notebook, just so she could look away from him for a moment. Has she ever had any real behavioral problems? There was a moment of silence. Leanne cupped her forehead in the palm of her hand, as if she had a headache. You know, she tests the boundaries. She's made some mistakes. Veronica's mother smiled sadly. For a while, she was in trouble every week at school. Cheating on tests, talking back to teachers, a few fights. Last year she got busted with a bunch of fake IDs and an ounce of marijuana. She's been in counseling since then, and it's helped. We've seen a big difference at home.
Has she ever done a disappearing act before? Leanne shook her head.
She's never gone missing like this. She's not always great about checking in, but she's never just disappeared.
Veronica nodded slowly. She looked at Adrian. You said you were with her the night she disappeared. Did you notice anything out of the ordinary that night? He bit the corner of his lip. If anything, it was business as usual.
What do you mean?
Adrian glanced up at Leanne and Tanner nervously, then back at Veronica, idly picking a French fry apart between two fingers. She's done it to me 100 times. We go to a party together, she meets a guy, and then it's like I don't even exist. She's boy crazy, huh? Girl, you don't even know. He looked miserable. So I told her before we even got there, if she ditched me, I'd leave her. And she'd have to get her own ride home. She promised we'd stick together, but lo and behold, here comes some Rico Suave with a $400 haircut, and she's on him like glue. So I hung out for a while and entertained myself, then I left. It wasn't until this morning, when Tanner called saying he couldn't get a hold of her, that I realized something was wrong. Then he called the police, and here we are. You didn't happen to get any pictures, did you? I did, and so did everyone else in the world.
He tapped his phone, then passed it to Veronica.
He'd pulled up an inbox for the email findaurora@infoblast.com. In the past 2 hours, more than 50 emails had come in, some with pictures attached. She scrolled through and read a few. Just sent $50 via PayPal. I will keep Aurora in my prayers, read one. She opened another. Recognized Aurora from the pictures I took last night. Hope this helps. Below was a photo of 3 white girls in bikinis making gang signs, and behind them, just out of focus but clearly recognizable, was Federico Gutierrez Ortega, leaning close to whisper something to Aurora Scott. Miss Landros set up the Find Aurora website this morning. I volunteered to sift through tips, so I'm getting some of the messages, he explained. He jabbed a finger at Rico. This is the guy she was flirting with when I left last night. I took off just after midnight, and the latest timestamp on any of the pictures we've gotten is 2:27 a.m. Veronica flipped through the photos. They weren't nearly as R-rated as the ones showing Haley DeWalt in the guy's lap, but they definitely showed Aurora looking flirty and Rico looking interested. She looked at her mother's pinched, pale face and Tanner's heavy frown. She didn't want to lie to them, but she didn't want to panic them either. Not yet, when there were still so many unanswered questions. If she told them Haley DeWalt had been seen with the same boy, they'd be terrified. And if that information got back to the press, her quarry might go to ground. Better to wait, to say nothing, until she had more information. If there was reason for them to panic, it wouldn't really matter when they started. She made a mental note to email Petra for the passwords for the website so Mac could be cued into what came through. Veronica pulled out a few business cards and passed them around. Please call me immediately, day or night, if anything changes, or if you think of anything that might be useful. I'll be in touch if I learn anything new. She stood up and grabbed her purse. Leanne gave a startled little gasp. Oh, I almost forgot. Wait there, Veronica. I'll be right back. She hurried down the hallway. Veronica stood awkwardly next to the table. Tanner kept staring at her with a woeful, earnest expression. Adrian scooped his uneaten burger into one of the white bags, taking it into the kitchen and throwing it in the trash. I'm sorry to meet you like this, honey, Tanner said. He gave a strained little smile. You know, your mama's my second chance at life. Well, truth be told, she's my 4th or 5th, but she's the one that stuck. We met in AA. I was 15 months sober when she started. We kind of looked out for each other. Every day when I thank my creator for another sober day, I thank him for bringing us together. Veronica didn't know what to say. A pained smile pulled her lips tight. For a moment, she was sure she'd caught Adrian casting a disparaging look over the kitchen island at Tanner. She suspected he'd heard the story before, more than once. Leanne hurried back, a spiral-bound book clutched in her hand. It was covered with overlapping vinyl stickers, band decals, skateboarding logos, a bumper sticker that read, "Cute but psycho. Roll the dice if you dare." She thrust it at Veronica.
"It's her diary," she whispered. "I haven't read it. I don't want to invade her privacy, but it might be helpful."
Veronica swallowed, sliding the book into her bag. "Thanks, I'll take a look." She gave a faltering laugh and mimed zipping her lips. "I'll keep it confidential, I promise." Leanne walked Veronica to the door. For one awful, sluggish second, Veronica was sure her mother was about to pull her into a hug. Then it passed, hugless, and she realized, with a stab of irritation, that a part of her was disappointed. "I don't want her hugs. I don't want her attention, her love. I don't want her." Tears spilled down Leanne's cheeks.
"Please, just help us find our little girl, okay?"
Veronica felt her fingers curl into fists. The muscles across her chest felt tight, like a carapace, like armor. "I'm going to do my best," she said. Then she opened the door and let herself out. Chapter 16. You'll never guess who showed up today. Back in her office a few hours later, Veronica stared at her computer screen. The cursor blinked rhythmically, an ancient ode to the blank page. Even though there were hundreds, thousands, of things to say, she couldn't figure out what to write next. She had work to do. There were lives at stake, careers on the line, and all she wanted to do was talk to one person, the one person she couldn't reach. It was just after 4 p.m. in Neptune, California, which meant it was 0430 hours aboard the USS Harry Truman. They'd had a date to Skype a half hour ago, but he hadn't shown up. That happened sometimes. If he was called out on a mission, he didn't always have a chance to let her know. She tried not to let it bother her, but part of her always thought, just for a split second, he could be dead right now. It was stupid, but she couldn't help it. "Maybe you already saw the news. I don't know. Do you get CNN on the Truman? Trish Turley's been making a meal out of it. Another girl went missing, and because the cosmos hates me, she just so happens to be Leanne's stepdaughter." The late afternoon sun filtered through the slats in her blinds, sending shadows across her desk. She leaned back in her chair and stared at the plaster on the ceiling, her mind combing over everything that had happened in the past few hours. It all seemed too complicated to try and describe in an email: the strangeness of her seeing her mom again, the confusion of feelings, the discovery that she had a little brother. She sighed. "I'll tell you all about it when you have a chance to Skype. Are you free Monday morning? My Sunday night? Let me know and I'll be online." She hit send and snapped the laptop shut. It was obvious that the disappearances were connected. Federico Gutierrez Ortega was seen flirting with both girls the night before they went missing. But what had he done with them? What could possibly motivate him to kidnap or hurt two American girls when he had so much at stake? She knew the evidence had to be airtight before she made an accusation. The millennials weren't stupid. If they caught a whiff of her poking around, they'd cover their tracks and then some. Meanwhile, Haley's fund had just hit $550,000 that morning. Aurora's was already up to $300,000 and climbing by the hour. As those figures rose, so did the number of cancellations rolling into Neptune's motels and hotels up and down the coastline. Trish Turley had rallied her fans, and the sudden drop in the number of spring breakers was becoming noticeable. A door opened, and Veronica suddenly became aware of raised voices in the reception area. "I know they came from this office, so unless you want to be charged with obstruction of justice, it's time to start talking." She jumped up and ran to the door to see Sheriff Lamb leaning across Mac's desk. His stomach had knocked over a jar of pencils, and they rolled slowly toward the edge.
He held a blue flyer under Mac's nose, shaking it back and forth with every word. Mac sat with her chin propped on her hand, staring at him with flat, bored eyes. She didn't flinch as he shoved the paper toward her face. "What's the problem with my flyers?" Veronica crossed her arms over her chest and leaned against the doorframe. "Did the color not match Neptune's City Beautiful initiative?"
"Mars."
Lam turned away from Mac's desk, his lips curled in a sneer. Veronica could see Mac visibly relax behind him.
"What do you think you're doing?"
She took the flyer from his hand and examined it.
"It looks like I'm trying to find Haley DeWalt. It's gonna be hard to do if you keep taking my flyers down, though."
"How many times do I have to tell you to keep me informed about your activities?" "Last I checked, you were busy ignoring my voicemails. And now that there's another girl missing, from the exact same house, it seems you might want to be printing up some new flyers right about now." He stared at her with burning blue eyes, stepping closer until he was mere inches from her face. She could smell stale coffee on his breath.
"There's no evidence the disappearances are linked," he said carefully.
"Isn't there?" She affected surprise. "Oh, I guess you wouldn't know, since you left the actual investigating for me to do. Well, buckle up, my friend, because I'm about to hand you actual clues to an actual crime wrapped in a bow." She crooked her finger at him and went back into her office. A moment later, he followed.
"I don't have time for games, Mars."
"No doubt, what with all that graft and corruption filling your schedule." Lam smirked, one hand on the back of the low chair facing her desk. She grabbed her laptop, pulling up the photos she'd received from Haley's friends and Adrian. Then she turned the computer around for him to see. "Aurora Scott disappeared from the same house Haley DeWalt did nearly 2 weeks ago. Both girls were talking to this guy right before their last sighting." She pointed at the picture of Federico. "He's who you want to be harassing, not Mac." Lam's pupils dilated slightly, but otherwise his face was motionless. The bluster had gone out of him all at once, leaving a quiet, calculating intensity to his movements.
"I take it you know who this guy is?" he asked coolly.
She darted a glance at him. "Do you know something I don't?" Lam straightened up, tucking his thumb through his belt loop.
"What I know is that you don't want to go slinging accusations at people like this, not unless you're 100% sure you can back them up."
And just like that, she was sure. He'd known all along that the house was owned by the Millennials, that the Gutierrez cousins were laundering money for their family. He was just too lazy, or maybe too corrupt, to investigate. The taste of bile burned her tongue, but she swallowed it down. "I thought you wanted my information, Lam. I thought you wanted to find these girls." He looked at the picture again, a conflicted expression flitting across his face.
"Do you have any proof that this guy had any part in either disappearance?"
"No, but he was seen with both girls just before they went missing. That's enough to get him in for questioning."
"Is it? Suddenly you're some kind of legal scholar."
Yeah. She smirked. "Suddenly, I kind of am." They glared at each other for a minute. "Look," she said, "cartels are a little out of my comfort zone." He flinched at the word cartel, but his gaze didn't shy away from hers. For a moment, his eyes raked her face as he tried to gauge what she knew. She waited.
"This is a delicate situation," he said finally. "I'm not hauling anyone in without real evidence. So if you find something on them and bring it to me, I'll consider questioning them."
"So let me get this straight." Veronica tapped her lips thoughtfully with her index finger. "You're going to let me do all the legwork because it's not politically viable for you to look into wild, orgiastic parties thrown by junior members of one of the most violent crime organizations in Mexico. I'll save you some trouble and just assume you're getting a kickback of some kind from the Millennials, maybe in one of their more legitimate guises." She cocked her head, feigning confusion. But if I find actual evidence that they're, I don't know, using their parties as some kind of lure to kidnap pretty girls, or worse, that's when you want me to hand it over to you.
Sounds about right.
Lamb gave her a smile that was all reptile. The sheriff's department appreciates your assistance in this matter. He gave her a little mock salute, and then he was sailing out the door, leaving the lingering notes of his Axe body spray in his wake. She went to the reception area. Mac didn't even look up. Her fingers were flying over the keyboard. Veronica took in her friend's jutting chin, the jerkiness of her shoulders. She wasn't happy. Not for the first time, she thought about how Mac had left a safe, quiet office and a fat paycheck for this. Now here she was, working as a glorified secretary, taking abuse from anyone whose toes Veronica stepped on.
"Are you okay?"
She sat on the edge of Mac's desk.
"I'm fine."
Mac looked up, her eyes bright and fierce, but a small smile flitted across her face.
"One of these days, I'm going to find something on that guy that'll wipe the smile right off his face."
"You handled him like a pro."
"Luckily, my intimidated face looks remarkably like silent defiance."
She exhaled loudly.
"So is he trying to nab our caller?"
"Sure is. But only once I've got something on the Gutierrez's. He's scared of the big bad drug lords. Doesn't want to take them on until we've got something solid."
"Well, shouldn't we be?"
Mac raised an eyebrow.
"Scared, I mean? Some of those stories..."
"Believe me, I am treating the ultra-violent gangsters with all the caution required. I'm not about to poke a rattlesnake nest if the snakes are all comfortably asleep. Did any of those background checks come in yet?" Mac looked up at her, hesitating. Veronica rolled her eyes.
"It's fine, just tell me."
"Okay, well, Leanne Scott, I mean, your mom, has a few misdemeanors on her record, none more recent than 2006, public intoxication, shoplifting, and trespassing. Looks like she moved around a lot between 2004 and 2006. I've got her in Barstow, Reno, Scottsdale, and then finally Tucson." Mac's eyes flickered from her screen to Veronica and quickly back again. "Married Tanner Scott in January of 2007, gave birth to Hunter Jacob Scott in December 2007. She started working for the dental office last year after Hunter started school."
"And Tanner?"
Mac pursed her lips.
"He's been kind of hard to track. Spotty employment history and no permanent address between 2000 and 2006.
"That's not too surprising. He told me he'd been in the bottle pretty hard before he met my mom."
"He was married to a woman named Rachel Novak in 1996. They divorced in 2000. Aurora was born 1998 in Albuquerque. Looks like he served 10 months in jail for check fraud in 2005. Aurora was a ward of the state while he was away. After he got out, he seemed to settle down. He got custody of Aurora and started working more steady jobs. Before Home Depot, he was a janitor for the city for a few years."
Mac looked up. "That's all that's coming up on the basic search. You want me to keep digging?"
Veronica shook her head.
"No, I think I can fill in the gaps." She knew the recidivism rates for petty crimes. No former criminal worked as a janitor for a few years unless he was determined to go straight. The idea of easy money became much too alluring after scrubbing toilets all night. Tanner Scott may have set off her bullshit detector, but it looked like he really had cleaned up. She realized Mac was watching her closely, her forehead creased with concern.
"This has got to be weird for you," Mac said.
"It's not. It's fine."
"Veronica, look who you're talking to. If anyone has mom issues, it's me."
Veronica forced a smile. In high school, she'd been the one to uncover the fact that Mac had been switched at birth, that the family she'd never really fit in with wasn't really hers.
"Okay, it's completely weird, but I'm trying not to think about it. Right now, I really just want to focus on finding Haley and Aurora."
She looked out the window over Mac's head. A seagull hung on the breeze outside, a pale streak against the sky.
"Pretty, for an animal waiting for an unguarded dumpster."
"Did you have a chance to look in on our other guys?"
"Yep. Chad Cohan is, as far as I can see, still snuggled up in Stanford. I've gotten into the Stanford security logs, and it looks like